Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. And welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby. It doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Although I take myself very seriously, as I'm an undefeated champion of the ADM Premiership League as of yesterday. I am JB, and I am here with Phil. Hello, Phil.
Congratulations, JB.
Again, we're going to have every week is going to be more congratulations. It's going to be congratulations for 52 years until I finally lose. Being a champion.
52 weeks.
Although I did say I never want to drink another beer as not a champion.
Are you going to retire so you can just retire undefeated?
No, I don't think that works. I don't think it works. You've got to go out and get another championship now.
Yeah, okay.
I'm basically like Tom Brady. I'm hooked on championships.
You're going to retire when you've got enough rings to cover both hands.
Exactly. Enough ADM rings for both hands.
And all your toes.
Yeah, so I've got some good going.
Yeah, well done. So how does it feel to be a champion?
Well, the champion stuff, I was a champion a few weeks ago. But undefeated was pretty cool.
Yeah, very good.
Now, before I continue about being an undefeated champion, Tim, how are you down the line?
Yeah, apologies that I can't be there. I mean, I congratulated you in person a couple of weeks back, but
yep.
I've prolonged the ability for me and Phil to shower you with congratulations at the same time in person. So apologies, yeah.
Well, yesterday we played against West Park St. Helens. I've got a few things to say about this. But do you know who I played against?
No.
Right, I'm going to say
West Park St. Helens, so a former rugby league player.
Yeah, former rugby league.
Okay.
And rugby union player.
Okay.
And I'll tell you who he played for, Rugby Union, Harlequins, and he won a title with them.
In 2012?
Yes.
Or whenever they won. It was about then that they won it.
Ooh. Okay.
So, someone that played Rugby League in 2012. Sorry, played Union for Harlequins in 2012 and Rugby League.
Mm-hmm. He's also been to a World Cup.
God.
I'm guessing he is like a South Islander.
Yeah.
He played for Quins. And then plays for Tonga.
Samoa.
So Samoa. Who did he play for in Rugby League?
St. Helens. I think he might have even played for England or Great Britain.
You're gonna have to tell me.
I'm going to say his name wrong now. Maurice
Faasalavu.
That's the one. And
who played in six for Quins.
Yes, and I can confirm he still hits like an absolute hammer. An absolute hammer.
Did you get tackled by him?
No. And I also didn't make a tackle on him either. So
sensible.
Yeah, he's coming down.
So there was no opportunity for him to say, podcast that. Even though you just have.
Yeah, exactly. So he was running down a channel which was occupied by me and then was vacated by me when our captain came across to also occupy the channel. I thought, your man. And that's
that's just self-preservation. That's important.
Yeah.
Family to think about, JB.
Yeah, well, absolutely right. But we have a scrum half at Tok H. He's one of the nicest guys that you'll ever meet, and I've never seen him angry. And the look of disgust in his face at what I just did. And he went, "You absolute pussy." And just like, disgust, hatred.
Rightly so.
I was like, do you know what?
You've got an opportunity to tackle a rugby, bit of a rugby legend there,
yeah.
And you've backed out of it.
I know, he is massive, though. Like, some people, when you meet them in real life, you're like, yeah, okay, nowhere near as big as I thought they'd be. No, this guy is just as big. And when you get closer to him, you realise exactly how big he is.
So I've just looked him up.
I mean, you've just shown, JB, you've just shown a lot of courage to admit that to a whole, well, to the world via the Egg Chasers podcast. If only you'd shown that kind of bravery when he was running at you.
Yes, quite. Well, once it was out. You know, there's no containing that story. You know, you can't do can't do damage limitation.
So quick question. Go on. Yeah, talk about Far Saliva.
Yeah, I just looked him up. 6'3", 112 kg is his listed weight. Although he may well be bigger than that now. He's 42.
Yep.
Now. And he did. He played for Quins for 4 years, winning the title. Played for Oyonnax for 4 years. But before that, he had 7 years with St Helens. Do you know what position? He's listed as.
Is he a prop, maybe?
Yeah, listed as a prop, which he's about the right size
for. That makes sense.
Yeah, he's a big boy. Yeah. So this is interesting. He played for Great Britain and England. 2 caps for Great Britain, 3 caps for England. 28 caps for Samoa in rugby union. For St Helens, he played 164 games, scoring 39 tries. For a prop, is not a bad strike rate at all.
And the boy can run. He can run all right.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so I'm going to double round.
Phil, sorry.
No, after you.
No, you finished the Far Saliva stuff, because I was going to ask Phil a question related to something you just said before that.
Well, I'm going to double back on this game, because I want to talk about something which happened in this game, but is actually the real issue for basically all grassroots rugby, from what I can tell, at the moment. But we'll save it for later.
Okay.
All right. That's put a pin in that one. I was just going to ask Phil, because as JB was saying about winning a championship at his level, I don't think I've ever lifted a league trophy as a player.
So, definitely with the twos at Sedgley and with Lancaster University, lifted one. A couple, but nothing as.
I thought you'd got promoted with Sedgley.
No, never got promoted. Got relegated a couple of times with Sedgley. So never got promoted when I was playing.
Yeah. The guys that have got the most titles that I know who have played, you know, won leagues, are also the same guys that have been relegated the most, because you either are in a team who never go up, or you're yo-yoing back and forth. There's not really much in between.
Yeah,
and I guess that was my point. We are at the business end of the season. A lot of leagues have already concluded or are about to, or very soon to. And if you're fortunate enough to be in or have been in a side that has won first 15 championship, enjoy it, because that is a very, very rare thing.
Yeah,
it is. Well, it's taken you 20 years, JB.
Indeed it has, yeah. Absolutely. I think the only other undefeated team in the country outside of Stockport. So Northwest has the two undefeated teams in the country.
That's cool.
That is cool.
That is pretty cool. Shall I just do the boring housekeeping?
Yes, do that.
Yeah. So this is Egg Chasers, as you know. Thank you for listening. And one way you can support us, if you appreciate the fact that we are the original rugby podcast, the only podcast that is there for you every single Monday morning, 52 weeks of the year, into our ninth season, nearly finished our ninth season, closing in on 10 years. And over 600 episodes. If you appreciate that, then there's a number of ways you can support us. Firstly, while you're listening, thank you for that. Secondly, by telling a mate. Thirdly, by subscribing. Also, leaving a 5-star review. Or going to patreon.com/eggchasers. Thank you very much for that. And you can always email contacteggchasers@gmail.com. And we've had, once again, some great correspondence on a brilliant weekend of European rugby.
Yes.
It was a good weekend, this. And I want to revisit a comment from I think we all expressed this sentiment a little bit to varying degrees last week about the surprise and slight disappointment at two-legged knockout rugby, which I don't think I try to think back as to whether I can remember this happening ever before, two-legged rugby games. maybe the...
Not in a serious competition, no.
Well, the Championship finals.
Championship, yeah, because one of the questions I asked to Rob Baxter before the game at Exeter was, Rob, you are one of the only people in the sport to know how a two-legged tie changes the dynamic. So tell us. Because, yeah, I was thinking, and that was 12 years ago when Exeter beat Bristol in a two-legged playoff final to reach the Premiership. But other than that, it does not happen. I was sceptical. I'm less sceptical now, having seen a weekend. I still am not a huge fan of it. I'll let you emphasise the positive, Phil, because I can hear that's where you're going, which is absolutely right. The one thing I'm not a fan of is the fact that it's given us more of the same country ties. So the La Rochelle v Bordeaux and Stade v Racing and Bristol v Sale, that feels less special than the cross-league competitions, which, as a double header, I'm all over Ulster, Toulouse and Munster, Exeter now. They are going to be amazing occasions.
Yeah, I get that point. For example, the two of the games that I didn't really watch were the Stade Francais Racing game and the Sale-Bristol game, because they just feel less special. But some of the other games were absolute crackers. And the Leicester-Claremont game, I think that's probably done. Every other game, I think, is to play for.
Yeah, but, I mean, even Leicester-Claremont, you look at the quality that Claremont have got. I mean, no. We think it might be done, but they've got...
No, it's done. It's done.
Well, let's wait and see.
It should be done. I mean, that...
They won't... I bet they don't even send a full first team.
Well, you mentioned
that's a good point.
You mentioned the quality that they've got, and they have got some quality players. I mean, the best two players were the two wingers, I thought, from Claremont. They were so dangerous the whole time. But they've got players... like seeing Fofana and Lopez and Parra, you're thinking, this is like 2012 vintage Claremont. They are a bit long in the tooth in areas.
That said, I mean, halfbacks can last for a long time because they can. In fact, if anything, they get better with time, I'd say.
They can get better with time. I think this Claremont team is not the greatest incarnation of a Claremont team.
No, I'd agree with that. But then I look at the rest of that back line and there is an awful lot of dynamism which you surround those older lads with. So, I mean, Fofana, he's an older boy, but he's still bloody quick.
What did they lose by in the end? 19 points. They'll go, we need to focus on the top 14, because they're not having a great season there either.
Yeah.
So I think they won't even bother sending a full team to Leicester. So, yeah, I agree with you, Phil. That one feels done. You're right. There's everything to pay for in the other games.
Yeah, every other game. Now, you'd say that Connacht... it's probably an uphill battle to go to Dublin against Leinster. They're probably not going to get anything out of that. And Stade Francais, they lost at home to a team that is considerably better than them. So that one is probably done. But the rest of them, there's some exciting ties coming ahead. And the Exeter-Munster game, that's going to be an absolute cracker at Thomond Park. Toulouse-Ulster is going to be dynamite. Bordeaux-La Rochelle was a great game. And the second leg of that is going to be spicy. And I think the Montpellier-Harlequins game is going to be dynamite as well, because Quins did not put in the best performance of themselves. Montpellier took all of their opportunities and won pretty... I mean, they were 34-0 up at one point. So Quins not playing their best stuff, but they did show through Lewis Leiner that they've got enough firepower to cause anyone trouble.
Yeah, if only they'd played Caden Murley, God knows what they could have done. that Montpellier game is really interesting because Montpellier were up, but they never seemed to trust themselves.
I mean, Caden Murley did play 60 minutes in the game.
Yeah, whatever. They didn't seem...
I'll tell you one thing, one person who has been listening, or two people who have clearly been listening to the podcast lately, Lewis Leiner, one.
Yes, yeah.
Semi Randrandra.
Well, look, he does one good thing and everyone thinks it's Christmas. You know, it's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. What do you mean it's fine?
He did one good thing. Look, he's going to do good things occasionally because he's a really good player who does good things occasionally. But, yeah, wouldn't be for me. Wouldn't be where my salary cap is spent.
Before we go any further, I am just going to point out, just because I feel like I'm the only person that's actually talking about this, I haven't seen anyone mention it in the last week.
I can't wait for this.
We still haven't had any resolution on the cancelled Worcester v Gloucester v Worcester game. We still, over 3 weeks, we still haven't had points awarded. So I'm telling you, the longer this goes on, the more I am convinced that there is some potential wrongdoing here and that Worcester could face a significant chunk of change that they're going to have to give to Gloucester in compensation. What I don't understand, why does this always happen? Why do things always take this long to sort out?
I don't know. Have you ever dealt with Premiership rugby? Like, have you ever actually?
They've handed it over to someone else, but yeah, it's just another example of just substandard administration in my mind, as I see it from the outside.
Yeah, you're not wrong, mate.
It does show it's clearly a complex situation, because most games you get an immediate judgment.
Yeah, I'm amazed that the rules of the competition don't specify what happens here. I'm sure that they do, but why aren't these? I know it doesn't matter. It'll resolve itself.
We've gone over it in depth. I'm just pointing out it's another week and it still hasn't been sorted. But anyway, that's that. So just keep watching that one.
Yeah.
Well, would you like to hear about another scandal from down the national leagues?
Yes, please.
Would you like to hear one, Tim?
All right, well, I'm here for a scandal, JB.
I'll just go back
and say it appears like there could be something dodgy. I'm not saying that what I just described is a scandal, but it could not be.
Yeah.
So I say a scandal. It's not a scandal in any sense of the word, actually. In fact, it's more of a conspiracy, and it's maybe more of a made-up conspiracy that I've made up. But it doesn't necessarily matter. Take in the spirit which is intended.
You've stepped back quite a lot from your first statement, from scandal to made-up conspiracy.
If you want it to be a scandal, be it for you. So, there was a game this week, and it was at the bottom of National 1. Darlington faced off against the mighty Plymouth Albion, and Plymouth Albion lost by 2 points. Mm. So I think it was 25-23 in the end. Now, that's not remarkable in of itself, but get this. This is the National Leagues. Do you know what Plymouth took up to Darlington?
So that is a long journey.
Yeah.
When you say what they took up to, as in the squad?
Team-wise, yeah.
The vehicle, okay. Second team?
They did their best. They played a National 1 game with only 3 substitutes rather than the 5.
What?
The bench was populated only by front row. There was a tight head prop playing on the flank, a number 8 playing in the centre, and a flanker playing on the wing.
What?
And they went to Darlington, and they nearly turned them over with that.
Was Graham Dorr playing? Dusted off his boots.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. So, Plymouth found themselves in a situation where their players had been withdrawn from their squad, and a lot of their players are coming from Exeter Chiefs, and they've also got a few from Pirates. Now, for whatever reason it is, the rules of National 1 and the RFU dictate that they cannot sign any more players. So, on Friday, there would have been people all in and around Plymouth who could have played, involved with Plymouth Albion, who could have played, who would have signed the registration.
Because they don't have a second team, do they?
They do not have a second team, no.
Okay, so that makes sense. So they will only have, say, 32 registered players, or 35 registered players.
So for whatever reason it is, the Cornish Pirates lads couldn't play again. And then Exeter recalled their on-loan players.
Ooh.
So really, this game was meant to be a Plymouth versus Darlington. Actually turns out to be Plymouth Exeter, because, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, certain people might not want Plymouth climbing the leagues or being successful in Exeter, but there is still that deep burning rivalry from back in the day, from people in Exeter against Plymouth.
But if Exeter are lending Plymouth players, surely it's better that Plymouth are playing at a higher level, so those players get the highest experience of rugby.
Who knows? But very, very strange withdrawals. Apparently, they were injuries of some sort.
Presumably, the strict rules around loaning players or signing players towards the end of the season it's designed to prohibit a team totally changing their or signing in 10 players for the playoffs.
Yeah, I imagine when you investigate these laws a bit closer, they'll make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And you'll see why they're there, because of exactly that. You don't want to be last 3 games a season and you just spend all your money on signing.
You spend $200,000 in the last three games and get a load of on loan All Blacks who just come in and play three games.
Exactly. South Africans will finish their Super Rugby season.
Yeah.
I'm certain Exeter have acted with absolute honour and integrity on this one. And if I can, just for a moment, I met some players from Exmouth Rugby Club at Exeter who said hello and said hello to you boys and all the rest of it. Top lads. They suggested that in the off-season, one of the questions we could ask is to just try and guess where each Premiership club spent their CVC money. It should be quite a fun little exercise.
Yeah, that's a great game. So Exeter have got a stand.
But yeah, Exeter have got a stand and, as I saw now, a hotel that is very, very nearly finished and looking fantastic.
Did you go to the rooftop bar? They've got a rooftop bar.
It's not open, but they do have a rooftop bar. And hey, we'll be in there having Negronis before long as the Devon sunset goes down. Don't you worry.
I'm going to say there is Southwest shenanigans going on between Exeter and Exeter Plymouth. One of the guys withdrawn was Frankie Knoll.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah.
So a famous name. Anyway, famous name who's coming through. So watch out for him.
I just every time I go to Stanley Park, I just love Exeter a little bit more.
And so cool, isn't it?
You say the hotel was there, which I thought, what a brilliant use of your money. That's what the CVC money should be used for. Invest it in something which is going to bear fruit in the long term and could make more money than the actual the CVC money itself rather than frittering it. But then first person I saw when I pulled into the car park, Harry Williams, who was in a Toyota Colorado van, 2010 reg, bit busted up, like he goes out and, you know, surfs or goes out into the countryside or whatever. He said hello. He walked into the stand in his flip-flops, walked straight to the ladies in the coffee place, the camper coffee just inside the gates, got himself an espresso, paid them money, wasn't expecting anything, said hello to absolutely... I watched him, so I was just behind him, and he said hello to absolutely everyone at the club on his way. And I just come away slightly more in love with Exeter every time I go down there.
Awesome. I can only back up everything you've said. When you go down there, if you haven't been to Exeter Chiefs, you won't realise how special the club is. It is absolutely awesome. It really is.
And Tim, what was the feeling after full time at this game? Because obviously Exeter, they won. They won 13-8 against a combative Munster side. But it felt, watching it, that they spent a lot of effort and didn't get as much out of this game as they perhaps should have done. So was that the kind of the feeling on the ground?
I think it probably was, but Dave Ewers certainly didn't give that a sense. And Rob Baxter, the chat with him was after we were on air, and after we were off air, because it was a short end of game, and he certainly wasn't like that. He was like, I'm really proud of the boys emotionally. I haven't seen them that together for a long time. The defence that they put in and to keep a team like Munster to only 8 points is I'm really proud of them. And do you know what? Actually, it makes it easier for us next week. We know we've just got to go to Thomond Park and win, which is an easy thing to say. But he'd already, within 5 minutes of the full time whistle, he'd got and this is, I think, what good leaders do. He had a story in his mind that he is telling his players that just makes it very simple and very focused on them. But I don't think an Exeter player would have gone to bed last night thinking that. I think in their mind it would have been, are we really, really... like the difference between taking 12 or 14-point lead to to a 5-point lead to... over to Munster is absolutely massive. Yeah. I don't think 5 points is going to be enough.
I think they would have, and arguably should have, given some of the possession and territory they had. They should be taking a 10-15 point lead. But two yellow cards are crucial.
They had the ball over the try line three or four times.
Yeah.
Did Rob Baxter not tell you? Did he... Was it press conference said this, but he wasn't particularly... He's not happy with the new law changes, because...
No, well, he did... He said, I don't normally talk... He said this to me, and I think evidently in the press conference afterwards, he said, I don't normally mention decisions in games, but... And in the case of... He said, in the case of the Ollie Woodburn one, I'm 100% with him. He said, if you freeze-framed any ruck in a match, you would find someone has some part of their body near the head of another player at some point. And I think I'm not blaming Niall Scannell for this, but Niall Scannell's reaction got Ollie Woodburn a yellow card. Ollie Woodburn's actions did not get Ollie Woodburn a yellow card, if that makes perverse sense in any way.
It does make sense, because he did go down holding his head neck area. I was okay with that as a yellow card, but I do also get Baxter's point that there is constant contact with heads, shoulders, necks in rucks, because it's an incredibly difficult and messy thing to do at the best of times.
Yeah, it is.
Well, what is the coaching point for Ollie Woodburn?
Don't go to rucks where Niall Scannell is present.
Lower, because he, bit more of an angle.
I would say he made an effort to like get his shoulder well away from the head, actually, based on, oh, you've got to be careful, we can't have shoulder to head at the ruck area. So he's taken his shoulder away from Niall Scannell's head, who was in a totally illegal position on the wrong side. And the only coaching point is don't bother and hope the ref gives you a penalty. But if he doesn't, then
you're screwed.
I don't know. I really think if that referee, and I don't actually, I'm only guessing based on that one decision, that referee's not played rugby at a decent level.
Well, the problem
I could be completely wrong.
Well, the problem with this is you're going to make the ruck ever more difficult. The ruck's already a nightmare to referee. It's going to just get more and more and more difficult, and people are going to be afraid to go into rucks because of the consequences. People will be afraid to referee the rucks. You'll get inconsistent decisions. It's just a nightmare all round. Mm.
I think that said, Exeter, Ollie Woodburn should have scored, and Jacques Vermeulen should have scored, and I can't remember who the... Was it Yendel?
Yeah, Yendel.
Oh, so painful. I mean, they should have...
Conor Murray did very well on that.
But like, brilliantly.
Do when Conor Murray steals that ball, or whatever he does that ball, right? Why is that completely different to what Patrick Schickling did for his yellow card?
I totally agree. Yeah. I completely agree, JB.
Because if it's over the try line, I get it, because kind of it's a free-for-all over the try line. Whereas, I know that's not the technical term, but basically it's a free-for-all. Yeah, there's no offside line. Like, you can just do what you want. But it's not over the try line, it's before the try line.
Well, this is the thing, right? So, as I think Munster were guilty of this to a certain degree, and refs let it off, they ref, like, a couple of inches away from the try line, as if it's over the try line.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're looking for held up balls, and you know some balls are not held up, some are held up. You know, teams are killing the ball, because if the ball's over the try line, you can legitimately all sort of crowd around it and hold it up. But then if you make that decision to hold it up before you get over the try line, that's a stone cold penalty, probably a yellow card.
Unless it's a maul rather than a tackle, because if it's a tackle, you've got to release as the tackler. If it's a maul and that collapses, there's no obligation to release.
Yeah, but even as a tackler, they're making the tackle, they're getting up, and if the ball is sort of in the vicinity of the try line, they're diving on the floor. So at that point, they've got to give a penalty and a yellow card. And I think that might, in a way, solve one of the issues we have, which is this ridiculous situation where if you get held up, you have to have the goal line dropout. That has to change.
No. They said on Thursday, the 50-22 and the goal line dropout are both staying. They're permanent changes now.
50-22 is great.
So I'm okay with them staying, because as we've spoken about before, you can't just keep changing laws. You've got to have consistency. The problem with both of them, they incentivise kicking and the goal line drop. So 50-22, obviously, if you succeed in a 50-22. That's brilliant. You get the ball inside the 22. You get a line out inside the 22. If you miss the 50-22 and it stops within the dead ball zone and you force the defence to touch it down, that's also brilliant, because it's a goal line dropout. So you get the ball back close to the opposition, like just outside the 22.
Give them a scrum.
Both of those things are incentivising kicking, which is not what World Rugby want to do.
That is true.
It's kind of counterintuitive. And I know it's a it's the second order effect, i.e. it's the risk for a defensive team of conceding a 50-22 or being forced to have a goal line dropout from touching ball under your own sticks should enforce you to put two or three players back, which should open up more space for an attacking running game. But it's not really working like that at the moment.
I think
the first order effect is of greater magnitude than the second order effect, which makes sense.
Yeah, I like the 50-22. I can say goal line dropout is a stupid rule. I'm trying to think why you'd even implement it. I don't see what it incentivizes other than very, very scrappy defence and sort of almost gaming of the system. Now everyone's looking for the hold up.
Well, it's the two things, isn't it? Because if you kick through and it's touched down, that's a goal line dropout, but also the held up over the line. So the kick through incentivizes your kicking. The held up over the line is perhaps a bigger. It disincentivizes
pick and go.
And it incentivizes, as you say, the scrappy defence. And
we missed the odd 5 metre scrum as well. I can't remember the last 5 metre scrum I watched.
They're so good. They're like one of the best things in all of rugby.
And this is where I've said this a few times, and people have written to us about this. I would, if you're worried that a 5 metre scrum, people are just using it to force penalties rather than as an attacking platform, there's a very simple solution to that. Devalue the penalty.
Yeah.
If you want more running rugby, incentivise the thing that you want.
But the problem is with devaluing a penalty is that you incentivise foul play.
Yeah, but you can be stricter on yellow cards. Yeah. So foul play and cynical play, yellow cards left, right and centre.
The reason you just gave there, Phil, is while I'm all right with the 50-22, because in theory it should incentivise... Well, no, actually, you're trying to bring about what you want through a negative, aren't you? That's the point. You're using the stick rather than the carrot. You're kind of going, hopefully this will make wingers stay back deeper, and then as a consequence people might run more.
But like,
it's the second order effect that the first order effect is incentivize kicking and hoping for the second order effect, which is if you incentivize kicking people will drop therefore there'll be more space.
You're absolutely on the money. Let's not get too stuck in the weeds there, because as we say, we had a brilliant game of rugby, and I've mentioned some of Exeter's both failings to convert and also issues that I think maybe they were hard done by at. Whatever the coaches at Munster said at half time was awesome. There was a brilliant shot of Graham Rowntree. Said hello at the weekend and, long time listener of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
Wig.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod. The brilliant, brilliant shot of him giving a real roasting to his forwards who came out in the second half and were awesome. And without Peter Amani and Tide Byrne and, is it Kill? Kilcoyne and Carberry and Clothy and others as well. There's people I'm not even mentioning. Oh, Andrew Conway, some big, big names.
Yeah.
Some of which will be back next week. Some young men really had, like, the two sixes were the two best players on the park. Dave Ewers and Jack O'Donoghue.
Yeah.
And Hodnett, the open side as well.
They combine really nicely.
Munster have been getting some stick from quarters, but I don't think any Munster fan could be anything other than just very proud of a second half performance. There's a lot of heart there, and it's set next weekend up massively.
This is a very, very good fixture, isn't it? As in, what do you want an international fixture, sorry, a European fixture to be? This is probably it. I'm not sure they get much better.
Yeah, that second game is poised beautifully. I think the payoff on the games that are going to will be going to the 79th minute in the second tie it is actually worth the two tie situation. I'm getting more on board with it.
Yeah.
Right. Shall we move on to something else?
Yeah.
Let's do another game. Tim, your boys this weekend got one hell of a beating. Unbelievable scenes.
Go on.
Marlowe got done by Bister. Can you believe that?
I'll just embrace it. Good on you, Marlowe. Well done, lads.
Yeah, quite remarkable.
While I'm at it, I'll mention an email from Sean Caskey, contact deadchasers@gmail.com. The subject note Tim's team in Lisbon. Hey, guys. Just thought you'd like to know Marlow under-15s are playing in the Lisbon Festival of Youth Rugby this weekend.
Go on, under-15s.
Thanks for your support. Thanks for your support, Tim.
Awesome.
Yes, excellent. So this actually...
Cheers, Jay.
It's okay. So so Marlow got beaten by Bicester, right? Now, on the face of it, not remarkable. Bicester, as I understand it, have lost their ground. So their ground was based...
Now an outlet village?
Yes. Well, so it came to me today. I've actually seen Bicester Rugby Club. I've been to Bicester Village, and the rugby club is right there. Apparently, they didn't renew their lease, so it's been taken over by the village. They've got to go...
I was joking.
No. They've got to now go to some new sports complex, Solar Sports Complex, and it's currently a bit of a struggle for them. So, good on them for winning, because that's a big result. That's a huge result. And, of course, gone.
I was going to say, if you finish that point, and then this is a beautiful way to dovetail into the next game.
Yeah, Aylesbury smashed Wellingford. But
standard.
But I will point out that Wellingford has the best social, or post-game social, allegedly. So shout out to Ian Jeffries, their number 8, retiring on 264 caps, which is pretty cool.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
That's
is very impressive indeed.
Yeah. What was the other game?
Also, I was going to say, Sam Hubbard, Leicester fan, based in Leicester, has just asked for... So we'll reply to you. He just said he's off to Lisbon the week after next and was wondering if there are any rooftop bars JB and Phil would recommend.
7?
Yeah, loads. Park was good fun.
Park was fine.
What was the first rooftop bar we went to?
No idea, but you'll never find it.
In a shop. It felt Japanese, the way we had to get into it, through, yes, like a shopping centre.
Now, if you've not drank in Japanese rooftop bars, much like me and Phil have, on a regular basis over the 2 weeks, you won't know what we're talking about. But if you have, you'll immediately identify what we're saying.
Yes, and there was a late night bar in a little railway arch, called Pink something, Pink Street or Pink Gin.
Yeah, that was quite good fun.
That was very lively.
Yeah, there are loads. I've got a whole map of them.
And Time Out Market was good to go to.
Time Out Market in the morning's great.
Yeah, that was very good.
There you go, Sam. There you go, Sam. Sorted. I'll just mention one other game. Tonbridge Juddians had an epic win. They were up against Leeds Tykes, so bottom v second bottom in the championship. And Leeds Tykes scored a try to go ahead in the 79th minute. Tonbridge Juddians at home, heartbroken. They got a penalty deep in injury time to sneak a win, 29-27.
Yeah, well,
yes, Hugo.
Well, this league this week, right? Hang on, let me just get this right. This is that one we're talking about, isn't it? Juddians.
Yeah. Yes.
So that was the game.
Oh, yeah, sorry, that one. Sorry.
Yeah. So that was the game that let Plymouth off the hook, effectively.
Okay.
Simultaneously... Right, hang on. No, I've got the wrong league now. The league below, sorry, there is a massive upset because Huddersfield. Hang on, is that the same league?
No, different. No, that's league, Nat 1, league, Nat 2 the, is yeah, Huddersfield, yeah, yeah, Rotherham,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, so I don't know if you noticed this. Huddersfield managed to beat Rotherham, which was unbelievable.
That is remarkable because Rotherham are Rosmer's second top and Huddersfield are bottom or there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Something's huge. Happened there.
Something has happened.
As in, like, it's a wedding or a stag, like, half the team's missing.
Yeah.
Or they've just decided, Rotherham have just decided, maybe we shouldn't go up this year.
An aerospace disaster. Something has happened.
Something.
Yeah.
But anyway, we've spoken about your team, JB, Tok H, and their championship again. We've spoken about my team, Marlow, apparently.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Phil's team.
Oh.
You must be so proud of those Ulstermen. Pride.
This was one hell of a game. This is one of the best games I've watched in a long, long time. It was absolutely magnificent. And two magnificent teams for very, very different reasons. Two magnificent teams. This was incredible. And the Malia red card after 10 minutes, it did change the game slightly. I don't think it fundamentally changed the game. Like, Toulon, they did not. So some teams... Toulouse. So some teams change the way they play when they have a red card. And Leicester, just this weekend, actually, being an example, you saw a lot more kicking. George Ford going for his spiral bomb, which was very effective with Freddie Stewart under it for the final try when they went down to 10 men, because they just wanted to play simple rugby. Toulouse did nothing of the sort. They were running everything from everywhere with 14 men for 70 minutes, which made it a remarkable game to watch. It was absolutely incredible. And Ulster were, over the 80 minutes, the better team, deserved to win, but they actually could have lost it, because Toulouse finished this game like a train. They were the strongest team after 65, 70, 75 minutes. And had the game gone on for 3 minutes longer, Toulouse would have won.
Yeah, that Mali red card, nailed down red card. It was a nasty fall as well.
It was an ugly fall.
Yeah.
And Moxham went off after that. Like, I hope he's okay, because Rob Little replaced him for the remainder of the game. Now, it wasn't deliberate. It's just totally clumsy. And a bit, there is a clear coaching point on that if you are competing for a ball where there are other people, unless you are 100% certain no one is around you, you have to get off your feet. You have to get into the air to compete for that ball.
Just on Ulster, not the world's biggest squad.
Nope.
Very talented starting 15, traditionally being considered maybe a little bit fragile.
Mm-hmm.
But why are they so good now?
They've been so... They can do it in one-off games, and they've done it over the last few seasons. They've beaten Clermont, they've beaten Leinster several times, they've beaten other teams in one-off games. It's whether they can back it up consistently. But a few things, like the centre partnership of Hume and McCloskey is brilliant, and you've got a kind of a classic that McCloskey is the big battering ram. Hume's got a lovely outside break. Both got some nice hands. McCloskey set up Balakoon his first try, I think. No, second try. Beautifully. So that's good. Burns and Cooney playing really nice stuff. And Nathan Doak coming off the bench, putting some pressure on Cooney's another very good young scrum half.
Cooney and Burns are a great example, right? Two lads who are, with the best will in the world, not international quality. Like, Cooney has had a few caps.
And Cooney arguably should have got more caps, I think. Yeah.
But, you know, the reason he hasn't is because there is a world-class scrum half in his position. And I think they sort of symbolise this team in terms of, like, all very, very good, but very...
World-class New Zealand. Not world-class New Zealander, who was jettisoned in as a project player. So I'd be a little bit upset if I was John Cooney.
Murray. I was referring to Murray.
Jameson Gibson-Parks.
Yeah, Murray's not playing now, is he?
Yeah.
Okay. But maybe Cooney was playing his best rugby 2 seasons ago when Murray was the first choice at that point.
It's just
fair.
It's how settled they are and how well coached they are.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what makes it for me.
But they've got... So, losing Stockers, who's been out for so long now, but to find two other close to world class. I actually think Balakoon is not far off world class. But two other back three players who are world class or there or thereabouts in Mike Lowry and Robbie Balakoon, Balakoon's almost untouchable at the moment. He's scored a hat trick in this game, and he's a brilliant all round player. He's great under the high ball, he's good defensively, his work rate, he was putting in some big hits and working hard right across the park in this game. Getting the most out of guys like that is amazing.
Totally, and I would say those two guys are great examples of what Ulster have developed over the last few years. They've been without a lot of Ulstermen, really, but there's guys like that, and then there's guys that can come off the bench, like Tom O'Toole at prop.
Tom O'Toole actually, he's
improved massively over the last few years, and so they've got guys that are Ulstermen that were just promising youngsters that are now first team quality, and that's what's changed. So you're right, in their squad is small but not as deep as others, but some of the players they can bring in or have developed and are now first team starters of high quality.
It's that development thing, isn't it, which is important, because there's a lot of guys here who after their first year or two probably wouldn't have survived in the Premiership, but you let them develop and then they do.
Well, Tom O'Toole, you just mentioned, so he's 23. There was, I think shortly after he came on, he was packing down against, it's a front row, an international front row of Faumaina, Mauvaka and Cyril Bai, which is enormous. Yeah. Tom O'Toole is not the biggest tight head prop. He is a very strong boy, but he's not an enormous tight head prop. And he destroyed them. He's just such a good player. And it's things like that, and things like Kieran Treadwell as another example.
Yeah, from Harlequins.
Former Quins, yeah. Who came in and put some monstrous hits in. And they're getting the best out of these players.
Yeah, Marty Moore being another one. I mean, Marty Moore spent some time.
Yeah, Marty Moore's a great example.
You know, not great, not bad. Very, very good here.
But then you dot in someone like Dwayne Vermaelen, who is such an important figure as a leader, as a focal point, as someone who's been there and done it all. He's such a useful player to have because he is
useful. That's a word used to describe Dwayne Vermaelen often. Useful to have about.
Very, very handy. But he's what, 35, 36? He's not as explosive as he once was, but he's so handy for that leadership and just the focal point.
Yeah.
To give you go forward when things are looking a bit difficult. So it was a very good all-round performance. But as I said before, had this game gone on for 3 minutes longer, Toulouse would have won. They would have scored another try because that Ulster team, despite being a man up for 70 minutes, they were made to work so hard for everything. Because that Toulouse team, and I know they're not in the league performing as well as they're still in the top five or six in the league, but they've had a few up and down results. That is some team. The way that they throw the ball around, the way they offload at pace and come through and just create things from nothing because they've got so many dangerous players, they are a nightmare.
And do you think 6 points will be enough, Phil? I'm just trying to think. I worked on a Ulster Toulouse game at Ravenhill. I think it was a pool game two seasons ago, was it?
Yeah, I'm trying to cast my mind back.
I think they played them, and I'm pretty sure Ulster almost had them, but just lost it at the end. I think Colby ended up scoring a winner. But anyway, I don't know. How do you feel about 6 point cushion?
So, when it was going to be a 13 point cushion, I was reasonably confident. When they scored that try, I went Untermack, and in the last 5 minutes, I don't know if you noticed, but. DuPont, they brought on the reserve scrum half but left DuPont on the field. So DuPont went to first receiver and Untermack went to second receiver. And that's exactly how they scored the try.
Yeah.
When he went over and they get the 7 points to make it 20 points to 26, or 20 points to 26, I think that's just tipped it into Toulouse's favour. Yeah. I think it's a 60-40 in Toulouse's favour. As it currently stands,
yeah, it's Toulouse's starting team is awesome. I'm looking at their bench, and my God, Cyril Bai, Charlie Faumaina, Richie Arnold, Anthony Jelonch. Not bad, is it?
Yeah, not bad. Gitoun, Placine. Did you see? It was the just before the Balakoon try. Placine went down with no one around. Or no one touched him really.
Oh. No, I didn't see that.
It looked like he snapped his Achilles.
Oh.
It looked... He just went down holding the back of his calf.
Right.
And I watched it about three times to try and work out...
That was when Balakoon did the intercept,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It was like seconds before. It was about 5 seconds before Balakoon intercepts. That looked awful. Because they actually mentioned as he was getting stretchered off. Because he had the whole interlude where... Balakoon takes 30 seconds to put the ball down because everyone gave up chasing him. And then you had question marks over whether he was onside or offside. And then at the end of that, so there was about a 5 minute plus stoppage. And as Placine was getting stretched off, they mentioned that he wasn't 100% fit coming into the game. They were trying to get him starting, couldn't get him starting. And then he's come on and what looks like a bad, bad injury. So I hope he's okay.
Completely.
Well, just on bad injuries, before I forget, and I apologise, JB, to cut across you, but
no,
Dan Levy announced his retirement.
Yeah, Dan Levy.
And think back to 2018 when he was just an absolute monster when Ireland won the Grand Slam and he'd come out of nowhere. Yeah. I mean, Ireland are just pulling back row players out of the ground like orcs in Lord of the Rings. But Dan Levy was a special player and with the world at his feet, and only 25, I think he is now, and has had to retire.
Yeah, he's still a young man. It's such a shame that, because we only got to see glimpses of him at his best.
Yeah.
And the other one...
go on, Phil, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, the other one, who's retired, Irish bulldozing back rower, Sean O'Brien.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
Has he retired, not with immediate effect, at the end of the season, yeah?
End of the season.
A lot of a fantastic career, and the Tulloch tank, enjoy your retirement, well played. And the other one, of course, is sad news because it's no age whatsoever. Tom Smith.
Yeah, God. That is...
50 years young. It's really, really sad.
And an incredible player. I watched back some of the... was it 97? 97 Lions tour to South Africa, which was a brutal, brutal tour, and he... was an incredible player, absolute quality.
Diminutive by certainly by South African prop standards, but by any prop standards, and just he kind of reinvented that role. He was one of the first prop forwards who played like a modern professional athlete should play rugby union as a loose head prop, just non-stop engine. And lovely, very, very softly spoken human being. And I was at a rugby writers' dinner a couple of years ago, and Tom Smith came along. And obviously, he was quite poorly at that point. And it's mad to see someone so softly spoken, and so he never, there was no hyperbole in what he said. There was no drama. And just to see a whole room of people completely hanging on his every word. It's special human being, and dead sad.
Will be missed.
Absolutely, yeah.
Did anyone watch Sale Sharks Bristol?
No, I knew you'd be watching it, so I watched the other game, the Bordeaux La Rochelle game, which was great.
Well played, Phil. You dodged a bullet, mate.
I did. I flipped over to see Semi's try. That was about the only thing I could tell you from this game. Semi Randrada scored a lovely try.
My word. I mean, just... It's disappointing. Look, it's only half-time. It's 1 point in it. I'm very confident Sale are going to turn this round and absolutely smash Bristol next week. I'm certain of it. I've never been more certain of anything in my life.
I think they will do as well.
But just watching how they played, and I was thinking what's going to come around the corner for Sale now... I mean, they're going to have to... this comes on the back, of course, because we didn't talk about it, because it only broke this week, that Lude and Faf are on the way.
Which was... It's been kind of hinted at for a while. That's not come out of the blue, has it?
No, and I have this is actually what I've been saying for a long time. It would not have surprised me one bit if they go, and then they went. It just, to me, it actually makes sense if they do go. They need to unwind a lot of the South African signings because of all the eligibility stuff and yada, yada, yada. But just watching how Sale were playing, they're so blunt. There's very little creativity. I mean, kicking 9 points against one of the worst defensive teams in the league is just pathetic. And if you think about how good this game was last year, do you remember when Bristol came to the AJ Bell? It was probably one of the games of the season. It was unbelievable. But for whatever reason it is, Sale have just taken a backward step.
Both teams have taken big backwards. The Sale and Bristol, who were both top four last season, they're totally different teams to the Sale and Bristol that we see this year.
Well, I don't really want to talk about Bristol. Let's just focus on the Sale bit, because there is, I don't know, there's something very wrong with this team. It's hard to quantify exactly what it is, but they're just lacking any sort of creative vision.
Not enough emotion. Or too much emotion.
It's got to be something to do with emotion, right? It's got to be, right?
Or having a Dupree at 10.
Oh, yeah. The unbelievable Rob Dupree. So, I don't know. Rob Dupree, who carries like his brothers and also passes like his like his brothers. So, it was disappointing. I'm sure they'll bounce back next week. Do you know what they look like? They look like a team that got beaten by Saracens badly last week. That's what they look like.
Hmm.
And they've lost a bit of confidence.
So you missed...
Go on, Phil.
No, I was going to talk about this game because I was going to move on to the other game that I watched.
Well, yeah, I'll just briefly say, just to sort of as a counterweight, even more vindication for quite bold selection on Pat Lam's part. Because going into a European knockout game, albeit over two legs, but nevertheless, on the bench, a humongous portion of his salary structure, Stephen Luatua, Charles Pietau, and Sammy Randrandra, all on the bench.
Yeah.
Which is a bold move. And something he identified a few weeks ago when he said, we are the best team in the league at starting games, with the worst team comfortably in the last 20 minutes. So he's kind of patched that up a little bit by going, I'm going to leave some reserves on the bench. And it's a brave call, and it could easily backfire, and then he looks ridiculous. What are you doing with a bench including Pietau, Luatua and Randrandra? But
yeah,
fair play. He's taken a slender lead back to a home game.
And the return of Nathan Hughes too. I mean, I can't imagine how that goes down.
It's a bit weird, the whole Hughes,
it's
Bath,
so weird.
Bristol situation.
So he goes to Bath and he was really quite good. I was very impressed with him. I thought, yeah, that's actually the guy they thought they were signing. Whatever it is at Bristol, he's just not having a good time. But could you imagine being Stephen Luatua? And they're like, yeah, we're starting Nathan. What? Like, I just can't see how that really works. But they did it and they've got a 1-point advantage going into a game that hopefully they will lose next week.
Well, here's one thing then. A very quick dovetail from Nathan Hughes to Zach Mercer, who had a very good game for Montpellier. But all of a sudden, it only took one game from Nathan Hughes to say he should be picked for England. So Cocker's Law, if you had to put Zach Mercer into the England squad, who would you drop? Would it be Sam Simmons? Would it be Alex Dombrandt? Would it be Tom Curry? Because one of those has got to be dropped if you want to have Zach Mercer in your England squad. So it's still well and good saying he should be playing for England.
Well, Dombrandt, based on today's
there's direct opposition.
Yeah,
there you go. At least you've answered it.
Yeah, I wouldn't bring Mercer in. That would be my answer.
He has always confounded me, Mercer, because even in Bath when they were woeful, and they still are woeful, he always seemed to play well. He always seems to be the leading light.
He is a very good player.
Yeah.
He's a great player.
If you can play really well in bad teams and really well in great teams, I don't see what the disconnect is from what he is and to what England want. Because he's a bit taller. I mean, he's certainly not a specimen in the way that a Pierre Spies is. Although, did you hear the commentary? Really interesting commentary. Apparently, the coaches at Montpellier rate him higher than Pierre Spies, higher than a young Louis Picamol, or an old Louis Picamol, as they had both of them. So they really do like him, but I don't see why his undoubted prowess at club rugby has not translated to more international honours. I'd love to know what Eddie thinks about him. So I suspect it's something like he can't carry in heavy traffic. There must be something very specifically he doesn't like about him.
I think there is a little bit of that, the carrying in heavy traffic. I think also his conditioning. So he's quite athletic, but he carries quite a lot of bad weight.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's a weird combo.
Yeah, so he's very explosive. He's very fast.
Mm.
But you are right. When you look at him, you're like, that's not a guy who works out that much, is it?
Yeah. And I think Eddie does like the people who
work hard.
Work very hard.
That is apparently...
I was going to say on that, but just when I watch him, I think, and I'm someone, just look at how I've talked about Alex Dombrandt over the years, I like to focus on what people can do rather than emphasising what they can't do. And when someone can do something really special, try and make the most out of that. Zach Mercer, who is kind of like Alex Dombrandt in that sense, when you have the ball, he's got the hands of a centre, the footwork of a three-quarter as well. Gas, he's a really, really good player with the ball. You probably do need to make up for a lack of work rate overall.
Yeah,
not a lack of work rate. That sounds like a criticism. I just mean,
well,
that's...
If he's running...
He's not a Mark Wilson... Yeah. 30 tackles a game guy hitting rucks. And I think teams get the best out of him, as Bath did and as Montpellier do, when they just say, don't worry about hitting loads of rucks, get your hands on the ball.
Yeah, we've
got other guys that will do that.
Yeah, we'll get Johnny Hill to do that, or we'll get someone like that who loves hitting rucks. I was going to say something about him, but it's escaped me. Eddie Jones. So Eddie Jones, that would tally into something which I know about Eddie Jones, which is he really respects the smaller guys who work out really hard because he is a smaller guy.
He is. Yeah.
You know, so that's just one of the things that he values.
Yeah. Now this.
So
game,
you're saying that like it's not like I imagine that's fascinating. Actually, narcissism getting involved in international selection.
No, I bet it's rife.
Absolutely
rife. I know what I want, and I'll take what I want. I mean, Eddie must.
So if you had like, if your head coach was like a, I'm just trying to think of an example. Let's say Matt Dunning becomes Australia's head coach at some point. Then what you do if you're a player is you call him up and go, hey Matt, I wanted to chat. Oh, actually, sorry, I've been feeling a bit down. People have been giving me some stick for being overweight. Anyway, let's get back to talking about my international future.
Exactly.
That really pull on his heartstrings.
Or you say, oh, sorry, Matt, I've just dropped a goal from 50 yards.
When you needed 5 points.
Yeah. Oh, no, but we needed a try.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing from this game. In fact, there's loads of things in this game, so we'll talk about them all. I just wonder a little bit about Andre Pollard. Is anyone else thinking the same thing that I'm thinking?
Well, he's
if you're
going to
say that he should be 12 for Leicester again, then
no,
I've
just
said it loads.
Like, I just wonder why every time I watch Montpellier, this guy isn't playing. I wonder why. Like, they've got Garbisi at 10. Demiru was playing. Someone else was playing, but not the guy who a Premiership club are about to dedicate what £500,000 to.
More.
Yeah,
more than that.
I'm thinking, what's the disconnect here?
That is an interesting question.
Yeah, so I just...
It is an interesting question.
I keep raising this question, like, why is that guy not playing? And I don't know if he, you know, maybe he's not creative enough for them. Garbisi is very creative.
Garbisi's playing some good stuff. But I wonder with Montpellier, it's because he's out, because he's going out, as in he's leaving the club, therefore they're focusing as much on the future.
But even in those situations, I mean, it's knockout rugby. Well, it's not yet knockout rugby, is it? It's two-legged rugby.
It is.
With the, you know, knockout flavour. You would want your best, most expensive players to play.
Mm.
That's what I thought. But no, I know nothing about French rugby. I don't know about the club scene. I'm sure someone who does know about French rugby can inform me as to why he is not playing. Drama. High drama. Why can't...
Then again, I was just going to say, you know, Baxter didn't just pick Hogg for this, because he was the most expensive and highest profile player last season.
No, not in the playoffs, he didn't.
Mm.
Mm.
So, let's talk about the high drama, which is Harlequins playing European rugby. And why do they do this? Why do they do it to everyone?
They've got to make it more interesting and exciting. They just want to have to know they've got to score tries for the home leg, and that's what they'll do.
Yeah,
and they're just doing it. They're just doing it to in anticipation of selling season two of their Amazon Prime documentary.
Oh, which is made by who?
Benno Abano.
Oh. It looks awesome.
Yeah.
Those look really good.
Yeah, Harlequins are like a sort of absurd version of Exeter. So, do you remember a few years ago, the best example of this was Exeter going to the corner against Saracens and not coming away with the pushover try until they did at the end. And they never deviated from their strategy, just carried on going. And I would have lost my nerve at this point.
At the fifth time of kicking for the corner and failing.
I got, no, enough's enough. But, you know, fair play to Exeter, they carried on, they go over and they win the game. First half, Marcus Smith and his boys looked like absolute amateurs.
It was embarrassing at times. So they just were too slow to react. They weren't closing things down. Just, amateur hour. 26-0 at half-time.
Yep.
34-0 down after 50 minutes.
Pathetic.
Ridiculous.
And then it starts happening. Now, they have left themselves one hell of a mountain to climb. I still don't think it's going to be good enough.
For 14 points, I think they can do it. Whether they will do it. Because Montpellier are top of the top 14 at the moment.
Yeah.
This Montpellier team. Montpellier, over the last few years, have had some incredible names on the pitch and not always got the best out of them, it's fair to say.
It is fair to say.
This is a good team. This is a team that is playing well and getting good results. So I think this fixture is another one that will be excellent next time around, like next weekend.
And Montpellier, they played into Harlequin's hands in that the mindset was clearly these guys are not dead. These guys are not dead. They started kicking their points, and I get what they're trying to do. They're just trying to extend that lead more and more. But actually, they should have just carried on the attack, retain the ball. You can't give Harlequins any ball, and they gave them far too much in the second half, where they could have done other things to prevent that.
Quinns took their chances really well. The Esterhazen tried, the Marchand tried, the Liner tried. They did. I mean, it took them 50 minutes to start playing.
Yeah.
But when they did, they were clinical. I think this is going to be a great game next week.
I tend to agree with you there. Whether they can do what they want to do early doors to Montpellier, I don't know them. And that would be the test for me, because when Montpellier are fresh and they can defend hard, Harlequins will not have it all their own way.
They definitely won't have it all their own way, because it's a massive Montpellier pack.
But as it breaks down, that's when you'll start to see Kane and Murley get loads of tries. So.
Or Lewis Leiner. One of the two.
Yeah, 2-1 ratio in favour of Murley. Just on Lewis Leiner, I think he's a great player. I really think he is a great player. Watching him today, he's just so... Yeah, both of them, to be fair, just so aggressive with their carrying.
And
Leiner, they make things happen.
Leiner got the one try and set up two of the others as well. One try and two assists.
I'm always suspicious of a player whose father was a big name and the guy doesn't play in the same position. Particularly, I don't think...
Like Owen Farrell.
At least Owen Farrell and his dad played broadly the same position. So, like, you'd say, the genes can cross over from father to son. They both kick, they both pass, yada, 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 right? But Leiner on the wing, the chance of him having the extremely fast genetics that you need to be a winger and have all the skills of his father, I just didn't think that might be possible. But no, it is. He's absolutely brilliant.
He's great. He is a quality player.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Faz. So Andy Farrell was at Sandy Park on Saturday.
Interesting.
To watch all the Ireland players. And he brought with him Owen Farrell's younger brother, who is the spit of Owen Farrell.
Is he?
Really?
It's frightening how much he looks like Faz.
Does he look angry?
he's a lot younger than Faz as well, isn't he? As in, like...
Yeah, a lot younger.
He's like...
He looks about the same age as Louis, my lad. Like, he looks about 12 or 13, something like that.
So he'd be like...
Hang on,
16.
Sorry, stop there. I understand you saying Owen Farrell's lad is 12 or 13, something like that, but Louis is 12 or 13, something like that.
In that age range.
Is that right?
Well, in that age group, yeah.
No, it sounded like you didn't know the age of your own son there, the way you said that. all right, so what, you think he's going to sign for Ireland?
Yeah, exactly, get him in, let the boys play.
He'll be the next English or Irish 10.
Well, hang on. Presumably, the Farrells live there, don't they?
Probably. You don't need to if you're an international coach. You live wherever you want. Eddie Jones lives
Stuart
in...
Lancaster doesn't.
No, Stuart Lancaster doesn't. He's a club coach. He commutes from Leeds.
And he's a club
Leeds.
Coach.
That's
he
mad.
Flies over.
Wow.
He flies over from Leeds Bradford Airport.
Farrell only needs to be in Ireland 7 weeks of the year.
Well, let's assume... Well, he probably sees more of his international players than their clubs see. So I don't know how all this time is broken up actually. But let's assume that he does live in Ireland with his younger son. Does his son now qualify on residency? I mean, surely.
If it's 5 consecutive years.
Yeah.
But I mean, Farrell's an Irish last name, so.
Well, he was in the setup, wasn't he? And the Schmidt.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If he's lived there, but he'd have to live there, so you're assuming he's not going to leave Ireland for the next at least 5 years. He's not going to play internationally before his 18th birthday. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm very sneaky, the Irish. Andy Farrell has a flat in the centre of Dublin, I bet. But, like, for example, I work with Sarah Elgan, who is married to Simon Easterby, the forwards coach for Ireland, and they live in South Wales.
Yeah.
Oh, do they?
And Easterby's he's a Yorkshireman, isn't he? As obviously playing for Ireland.
Interesting. And there's no provision, is there, to play for a nation just based on the fact that your dad is the coach?
if any country would take advantage of it, if it was, it would be Ireland.
It would be Ireland. You're absolutely right. This is the most dastardly thing they've done, since they poached Mike Haley from Sale.
Well, ask Bryn Gatland. He never got an international cap.
Oh, well, hang on. What about Ruddock?
Yeah.
They stole Ruddock. He should have been Welsh. All sorts going on.
Absolutely.
Does anyone know who AGC rugby are?
AGC.
Yeah.
Is it like, is it the same, does G and C mean the same as the GC and RGC?
No, it doesn't. It's not Gogleth Cymru. So, big shout out here, because one of us three is working this game. You doing the Army-Navy game, Tim?
I'm not sure I can officially announce that.
Oh, sorry. Let's not talk about it. let's just move on.
Let's just mention the fact the Army-Navy game is happening at the end of this month, on April the 30th at Twickenham. And Sam Matavesi was back in. I called it. We got an email from Jim, contact@gmail.com. He says, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. Great to see Sam Matavesi back in Navy colours today and beating the RAF. Sets us up for the Twickenham showdown against the Army. Tickets still available. If you need tickets, let me know and I'll sort you out. Cheers, Jim.
So I am going as a guest of AGC Rugby, which is Adjutant General's Corps.
Nice.
Yeah, I hang around in the right circles, some might say. So thanks to Mick Cotton, Cub Cubbins, and Jamie O'Mara, all of AGC Rugby.
Awesome.
It does sound pretty cool, that.
That's very cool.
I don't know how... they sound fairly important, AGC Rugby.
There might be a few other...
Can you not get Phil in, and then we can have a... We can make a...
Phil can't come. He's in a wedding.
I've got a wedding in Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah. I might be taking...
I think it's... I'm pretty sure it's that weekend. I just need to double check, but yes.
Might be taking... Is there
any room in that AGC hospitality afterwards?
I believe that there is, for the right people. I can talk to my people, and then I'll see what I can do.
Also, I'll just jump in with another email here. Doug Henderson. Nice one, Douglas. Douglas Henderson, contact@gmail.com. He says, I've enjoyed listening to your podcast for the last 6 years. Where were you for the 2.5 years before that, Doug?
Yeah.
No, good man. He says, just over 3 years ago, I moved to London from Toronto. And within 2 weeks, I joined a club in North London, Finchley RFC. As you have mentioned many times, it was a great way for me to find a community and friends as I got settled in a new country. That, in fact, that whether you played rugby or not, that would be the advice. If you move to a new country, find a rugby club.
Yep.
That's a great shout. He says, my final week in the UK was capped off with Finchley 15 winning London 3 Northwest with the last play of the final game of the season.
Awesome.
Well, do you know what, Doug? Enjoy that, Doug, because as we said at the very start of the podcast, these are rare moments, but particularly in your case, it sounds extra special. He says, our 9 took a quick tap penalty, Dumeven stepped inside at the halfway mark, storming down the field, drew in the 15 to release his 10 just inside the 22. and saunter under the post in the 80th minute to seal it. It was like watching DuPont and Untermack. He says lots of new and old fans were out to watch the home game, and the change to making leagues more local should help rugby across the country. Now, just to the final part, leagues. He just says back to Toronto to start pre-season for Bay Street Pigs RFC. And keep the winning feelings going, and hopefully the Egg Chasers will come out for a Tier 3 tour to Toronto to watch our crumpling national team, all the Toronto Arrows. Bring your boots, and we'll be happy to give you some game time with the Pigs.
Oh, yes.
I'd love to go to Toronto.
Go on the Pigs.
Definitely keen for that.
Yeah, by the way, if you do want to play some rugby and you're over 35s, please get in touch with Egg Chasers' general manager, Captain Lee. We are putting out our over 35s team. And I think we've got a general sevens team as well. So if you're a player and you just want to play some rugby, get in contact with us on the contact. Well, what's the email address, Tim?
contact@chasers@gmail.com. Have we entered officially tournaments now?
I don't know which ones we've entered. That is above my pay grade, but Captain Lee will sort it out.
Captain Lee's got everything in hand.
I think Captain Lee is waiting on us to green light which ones we're at.
Well, I want to do one in Llandudno, which is a brand new one, because that's my hometown and it's dead easy for me. I quite fancy North Dorset, but I also really want to do Bournemouth. Really want to do Bournemouth. So we'll see.
Tell Captain Lee those three, and then let's get them done. Let's get them in the diary.
Yeah, we need to sort it out. So if you want to play, drop us an email. Do you want to talk about Leicester Tigers some more? Because we just said well done, but we didn't actually talk about what they did, which was quite astonishing.
It was. It was very impressive. That Leicester performance to bully Clermont, and I mentioned it before about the kind of aging Clermont team, and they're perhaps not the team they were. They're still a very good team. They've still got talent right throughout. They've still got a monstrous pack, and Leicester bullied them.
Yeah, do you know what the Clermont thing on the aging teams? It just sort of rang a bell a little bit, which is a lot of these French teams are aging. And they seem to get a tremendous amount of value out of older players. So if I think of the historic Toulon teams, which started beating everyone up, they were really old.
Yeah, but the Toulon team was international players who have got all the experience and all the leadership and all the knowledge, and then combine them into one big team.
And I think when Toulouse won it last year, they had two lads who were at least 37, if not 38.
Jerome Kano.
And the enormous man.
Samoan Sekaru.
Not Maka, it was top. Doesn't matter. Him.
Joe Tacori.
Joe Tacori, that's one.
Yes.
So, yes, ageing. I don't know. They sort of remind me of AC Milan back in the day, when they had all of the 40 year old. Maldini's and Nesta's.
Maldini, Baresi and Nesta.
Exactly. Anyway, that's
unfortunately Clermont aren't. This team wasn't playing like that, and I don't think they have done for a couple of seasons.
No. But this is all about Leicester. I think Leicester just looked so good, and their scrimmage. I mean, Ellis Genge over the last 6 months has just turned into maybe the best loosehead on the planet.
And the best running forward on the planet, kick returner. He was scoring. Him and Montoya are so dangerous around the rooks because they've got that explosivity and that low centre of gravity. They're brilliant finishing off those tries. The mauling of the Leicester team was excellent. The defence was excellent. Some of the wide passing game with Ford and Freddie Stewart was excellent.
Oh my God, Freddie Stewart's hit was. Well, the hit he received looked painful.
Which one was that?
So one where he had to sit down for 5 or 6 minutes. It looked like he was in physical pain. The winding was so bad.
Yeah.
And then it was a late hit, but it wasn't late enough to be concerned about. The other one which we need to talk about is the Porter red card.
Yeah.
I watched that 3 or 4 times and I still don't understand what happened.
So it's a misread from Porter. But I genuinely think Fritz Lee was just out of his eye line. He's following the ball and the player going round, and Fritz Lee comes in.
He thinks, I'm with you, Phil. I think he's looking at the 10 thinking he's going to wang a pass here. Porter is anticipating the intercept.
He's not looking at Fritz Lee at all.
No, he's looking at the ball.
Now,
is Fritz Lee trying to block him, though? Because Priestley seems to change his line of running.
He's running a bit of his unders line, but I don't think he's trying to block Porter. I think he's just running the unders line to create the overs line out the back.
What I don't get about this, so I can sort of, I'm trying to work out who Porter's looking at, so I'm glad you've described that for everyone, because I didn't see that. Now you've explained it, yeah, that makes sense. So he's tracking, he's looking at something else, and Porter's running. But what the hell's Fritz Lee looking at?
He's not really. So I think neither of them are quite in each other's eye line. I think they've not really seen each other. They're both looking more inwards at where the ball is coming from the 10's hand, and they've not really seen each other. So this is one where I get why it's a red card, because there's head contact. I mean, it's head-on-head contact.
They need to do something. Something must be done.
It's off the ball. Now, I would be absolutely fine if this gets given as a rugby incident or a yellow card. I'm actually fine if it's a red card, because then it's consistent. I don't really have any problem with any of those things, and it's such an unusual event that there might be one red card in I don't know, 5 seasons for something like this. So it's not it's not a major issue either way.
It's not, and it didn't affect Leicester one bit. They just went on and did other things.
Slightly changed their game, and they were 7-0 in the 20 minutes that they were a man down.
So I would like to see that not be a red card, because I just think...
It's a rugby incident.
Yeah, what's happened here is you've put yourself in a situation as a referee, because it's on the big screen. There's two guys. One has got blood pouring down his head. You know, the Twitter mob will be going, something must be done, or, you know, you've got to take... Welfare's got to be number one priority. And actually, welfare doesn't have to be number one priority. Entertainment has to be number one priority. If it's welfare, we wouldn't play the game. So it just shows how stupid they are.
Well, even if you took a different priority and it wasn't entertainment, even if it was just integrity, that could be another word you'd choose.
Yeah,
I think the decision has been taken, because the outcome was two guys on the floor, one with blood coming out of their head.
Yeah,
that's why the decision was taken, but not because objectively. If the two guys had got up and been patting each other on the back, shaking hands and jogged,
that's
on,
exactly right, Tim.
It would not have been a red card.
Yes, if they just sort of tangled and, you know, sorry, bro. You know, that'd be fine, but you know, the fact there's blood coming out everywhere and, you know, concussions.
It is okay that accidents happen sometimes.
That's
allowed.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, look, he got himself in the situation. The referee got himself in the situation, and something had to be done. So something was done, and I don't think he'll, as a referee, I don't think he's going to get criticised for being too harsh, is he?
Definitely, the referee will get no criticism, and I'm kind of loath to give him criticism, because he's applied the laws as they're written.
Yeah.
And as I said before, this is, you'll see one of these every 5 years, so it's not a big thing.
Just
not a big issue.
On the ref, I thought he was very, very good. A Georgian ref, unbelievably, wasn't speaking French to the French players, which...
Offensive.
So outraged me. But I thought he did a pretty good job. I mean, of all the games, this one really flowed.
I think Tommy Riffel had a brilliant game at the breakdown. He got so many penalties, and he was everywhere. I think some of those penalties, I think maybe, I don't know, 20 or 30% of those penalties with a different ref would have gone against him rather than for him. There was a few where perhaps he wasn't supporting his body weight, but he played the referee brilliantly. I'd have no issue with the referee in this game at all.
What must George Ford think? I mean, he came to Leicester to win titles. He might win a title this year, but I put that more down to Richard Wigglesworth. You know, it's not an accident. And then at the end of the year, he's leaving. I think, Christ, I've just about got this team. My literally the first club team he's been at for 10 years. Well, probably since he was at Leicester last time. Where he needs to be as a rugby player, and he's off.
The Bath team had 1 year in 2015, I think.
That's right, when they got knocked out of the semi-final of the Heineken Cup by Leinster.
And they lost in the final. I think they won the league and then lost in the final to Saracens.
I think they started Sam Burgess in that game, didn't they?
Yeah, I think they did.
over Carl Ferns. What a joke.
I think George Ford will, and he's got every reason and right to, I think that's how much he will back himself, that he will not think that. He'll think, I'm enjoying this, I'm going to win the title this year, and I'm going to make sure we win the title next year with Sale.
Well,
and I wouldn't put it past him either.
I would. I mean, the body of evidence suggests that he's been very good where he goes, but it's not just about him.
Do you remember when Quinns won the title last year with like Marcus Smith, everyone going, that guy's international class and he wasn't getting picked? That'd be George Ford next season, as it has been this season.
Sorry, say again, Tim. When everyone said what?
Quinns definitely benefited from the fact that Marcus Smith was not used by England last year.
Yes. Yeah.
Leicester are getting that benefit this season, and Sale are going to get that benefit next season.
Yeah, it's going to take a year or two. Look, Ben Darwin says it takes 3 years for fly-halves to get good. I listen to everything Ben Darwin says, and therefore, in my mind, it's going to take at least two.
I think that may be the case in most cases, but I think, and you've already pointed to Sale's attacking bluntness at the moment. George Ford will have an enormous impact.
Well, as an understudy to Rob Dupre.
Exactly. Exactly.
I hope you're right.
I don't necessarily agree with Dan Young 100% on this, but I'm going to read the email out. It's entertainingly written. Hello, gentlemen, said Dan. I sent an email last week about inconsistencies between the refs. So I must applaud Carl Dixon for actually being consistently bad when it comes to making big decisions.
Oof. Dan.
Surely he's becoming a bit of a liability when it comes to those decisions. And I also look forward to hearing JB's view on Semi's performance versus Sale. Thank you for keeping me entertained on my commute to work. Yeah, well, we put off Semi, and I'm glad you enjoyed that win, Dan. What a brutal sentence or two.
What has Carl Dixon done wrong?
I think it's a sentiment that quite a lot of people will be nodding along with, I have to say, just from what I've seen.
Yeah, I think Carl Dixon does get some stick.
I think he gets some stick because he's quite brash, isn't he? You know, he's a handsome chap, he's in good shape, he's an ex-player, he knows what's what. Recently he has got some stick, but actually if I look at the body of work that he's compiled over his time as a ref, I think he's really good. I really do think he's excellent. People have ups and downs. I suspect that he's good now and he'll continue to be good. But I do know what you mean. There have been some recently where he's got himself in a bit of trouble.
And
well, that was. I think this is related to the what some people are saying should have been a red card between Leinster and Connacht.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're absolutely right. Actually, that is the BT. I want to talk about them too. The BT pundits were saying that is a stone cold red card, and having watched it, I can't come to any different conclusion.
I've not seen this one.
Yeah, it's just the most blatant shoulder to a head that you've seen. And if that's not a red card,
in which game was this?
Connacht Leinster.
Okay, I've only seen the highlights of this game.
Yeah, and if that's not a red card, I don't know what a red card is. So yeah, Dixon has probably let himself down a bit there.
I did see the. I think he got given as a red card in the... Was it Brieve Saracens? Saracens won by 50 points.
I have no idea what
yeah.
That is a... That's one of the worst hits I've seen in a long time.
Did Owen Farrell do it?
No, not Owen Farrell.
Okay.
Brieve, I think it was Brieve, fullback. Was it Alan Davis? Makes a break, feeds the ball inside to, I think, Jamie George, who goes under the posts. And as he gives the final try-scoring pass... The Brieve fullback just jumps up and nails him shoulder to the head. What? And I think totally, totally deliberately. Brieve are getting hammered, frustrated, but there is no excuse. I think that could be like 3-4 month ban.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. If it's that bad.
which if Brieve aren't having a particularly good season, they're not enjoying themselves, brilliant. You can just go, there you go, you can have a good old...
summer holiday.
You can start a good summer holiday, yeah.
Do you know who I feel
There was always that time when footballers would do that. You know they'd get themselves a yellow card so they could have a good holiday.
Now, do you know who else is treating their job a bit like a holiday? You're not going to like this, Tim. You're going to hate this.
Not Pat Lam, is it?
What are you going to say?
You're going to hate this.
I know where you're going.
I hate to do this, right? BT Sport, they're not smart enough. They are not smart enough for what they are doing. I was looking at the broadcast today, and the reason this upsets me so much is because this is meant to be the premier event in the Northern Hemisphere, which means it is the premier competition for club rugby in the world. It's the knockout phase, and everyone's dressed like they're going for Sunday... Well, not even going for Sunday lunch. They look like they're going to buy a sandwich from bloody Co-op. Like, they're
Lawrence Stallo was in some kind of walking windbreaker.
What was
like Stone Island windbreaker type thing?
What is that about? Like, it should be.
You're gonna have to fill me in here, because I've been at my dad's 65th birthday, so we've been having a big family gathering, and
I was out of commission all day.
So was this at a location at a ground?
No. So to be fair, the people at location looked relatively small, which is good. The people in the studio, I mean, the problem is, some of them are quite cool. And actually, Ugo is completely excused from this. He looks smart.
Tommy Bowen Bod, and I'll apologise because I don't know her name, but the lady presenting yesterday, they all look quite head.
Jenny Drummond?
I honestly don't know. I never saw her. Yes. Scottish, yeah. They all looked pretty smart, but
they just need to be smarter. Everyone, I think a collar is mandatory. I think probably a jacket for finals. You've got to wear a tie, and the reason because this is a huge event. Right, this is like for some lads. This is the pinnacle of their career. It's knockout rugby at the highest level that you can possibly play your club rugby at. When you turn on the TV, you want to feel like this is an event. And I know BT in the past have said we don't want to be too stuffy, and I think they always used to get the balance right. But I think it's something to do with lockdown. I think during lockdown people didn't get as dressed up, and now it's sort of ran into their mainstream broadcast. It just needs to be a bit smarter.
So that's
I do think there is. I do think there's. I will just say sorry, Phil. I will just say I do think there's a differentiation between on location and in the studio, and you look at BT Sports football coverage at the grounds. When they're sat in the little room where you can see behind them from the corner of the pitch, they're always, I mean, and this is football, they yeah. are dressed up to the nines,
yes.
with crisp suits. They're always looking sharp.
Yes,
that's exactly and, how it should be.
And I always wear a shirt and a jacket and shoes when I'm out on location. I do think you can ease off a little bit in a studio, and when they're in Marseille, Doyle will be in full shirt and tie. Ugo will be as well for the finals. So there is definitely a sense of occasion. I do think you should cut a little bit of slack when you're in the studio.
Can you describe Lawrence Delaney's outfit, please, Phil?
Well, as I said before, it's some kind of Stone Island windbreaker.
Stone Island windbreaker.
And Ugo next to him looking very smart.
He's won a World Cup. He's won a World Cup.
I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
Not for dressing.
You won a World Cup, you do what you want.
You know, people have won.
That's an incentive for other people. Win a World Cup, do what you want.
People have won Super Bowls, and you watch the NFL coverage, and then they'll be in their suits and they'll be wearing their rings. You know, it's just all. It really winds me up. It means they're not. Here's another example, right, of scruffiness in rugby. A very senior man within Premiership Rugby in midsummer is wearing bloody Christmas socks in and around the game. Now, you know, look, wear whatever socks you want, but like when you're that senior within the organisation, what if you happen to bump into like a future sponsor and you're, oh, this is the guy responsible for managing our message to the outside world? Oh, brilliant, let me just sign this cheque. What a serious sport they must be. Like, just take it seriously. It's your job, take it seriously.
I will just say, like, even though quite often, as is the case with the Exeter game at the weekend, you know, my wrist might be all that you see. I do think about even matching my socks and pocket square.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. If you don't take it seriously, why should your audience?
But so,
rant over.
Yeah. Yesterday, Tommy Bowe. And, what did you say her name was?
Jane.
Jane Drummond. So that's a picture of them there. Bod in a black shirt.
Perfect. Fine. Collar.
Tommy Bo, a pink or peachy shirt.
He's got a collar. Looks great.
And Jane Drummond in a cream blazer. Very smart.
Do you know who always...
I love Sarah Elgan's jacket that she was wearing yesterday.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Sarah always looks excellent.
Sam Warburton, Peter Stringer, Andy Goode. Spot on.
Just saying.
And JB, seeing as you're ranting about clothing, you've dressed up and you're wearing shoes.
I am today,
but not any old shoes.
What these old things? These are.
Let's have a look.
Brand new Nano 12s. Oh, what?
they are very nice.
They're all right, aren't they?
And I'm going to get yourself some new Nanos.
Some new Nanos. And do you know what? I'm going to retire.
Let me see, Jake. Let me see. Normally, I'd be asking to see. People would be asking to see your bare feet.
Can you see?
I'm asking to see your shoes.
Can you see me? I'm contorting.
Lovely. Are nice.
That looked uncomfortable, the position you just had to get into to show Tim your shoes.
And I think I'm going to return my Metcons and get some Adidas drop sets. Oof. For lifting. Oof.
Nice.
Yeah. Can't get enough of that.
Very nice.
But I wouldn't wear these to do a studio broadcast in BT Sport.
No, you'd be wearing your Stone Island windbreaker.
And my Rockport.
I went to a gym, a pure gym, as I was driving down towards Exeter. I just stopped for a little workout on the way.
Yeah, nice.
It's a late kickoff.
That's good.
Obs and chest.
yeah. There was a guy in the gym, in a pure gym. This is important to point out because it was a pure gym. And he was wearing a lifting leotard.
Fair play.
Wow.
His lifts were very good. He was doing some textbook power cleans and stuff. But I've just not seen that in a pure gym. I haven't seen someone with the proper weight shoes and a lifting leotard.
So when I used to go to pure gym in Oldham, right? And I used to do some Olympic lifting on the platform there, which doesn't make you very, very popular in a pure gym.
Yeah, because everyone wants to curl on the lifting platform in a pure gym.
Yeah. Anyway, I ended up making friends with this guy who also did the Olympic lifts. He's doing his overhead squats and all the component parts, and he's really good. So I trained with this guy a few times. I'm like, where do you learn your Olympic lifting? You're really good at it. Prison. So yeah,
awesome,
but very nice man. What else have we got to talk about? All the games from next week. I guess you can just listen to last week's podcast and take our predictions from them.
One more game that we not really touched on was while you were watching your beloved Sale lose to Bristol, Bordeaux-La Rochelle. This was an interesting game.
What happened?
So they're second and third in the top 14.
Yeah.
Two really good teams. And there's a bit of spice between Ronan O'Gara and the Bordeaux...
Urios. Christophe Urios.
Yeah. There's no love lost between those two.
No, and really not.
La Rochelle battered them. It was 31-13 in Bordeaux to La Rochelle. It was a good game, and it was... La Rochelle were the better team throughout. And there were some quality players and quality performances. So some of the names are awesome in this team. So in Bordeaux, you've got Cordero, Tranduc, Poirot, although he went off injured after 3 minutes.
The best player on the planet.
Who? Luku.
Cameron Wauke.
Wauke was one of the best players, actually.
Yeah, because he's literally one of the best players on the planet.
Scored a try and set one up. He was definitely the best player on the Bordeaux team. You got Picamoles on there, on La Rochelle. You got Bryce Doulan. You got Jonathan Dante. Raymond Rule scored a brilliant try, making Picamoles look every bit as old as he is. Danny Prizo, Uini Antonio, Will Skelton, and Aldrete, who was awesome. And then Bottier, who was the 23 on his back. So the outside back sub, but basically covering half the team when he came off the bench.
Sounds about right.
So that I think I mean, Bordeaux are good enough to come back from that, but La Rochelle have positioned themselves very, very nicely for the second leg.
Yeah, Ja Rule. Raymond Rule always reminds me of Ja Rule. Just when I hear the name.
Brothers, aren't they?
Yeah, Raymond and Ja, the Rule brothers.
You just reminded me, I was on the drive back from Exeter. I was listening to a Joe Rogan podcast and they started talking, him and his mates started talking about Trapped in My Closet by R. Kelly.
Oh my
which
God.
I realised I'd never listened to.
What? So, how have you never listened to that?
I'd never listened to it. They started playing some clips of it.
Oh my
and I
God.
Thought, oh my God, I've got to. All these years on, I've got to. So I listened to it. Oh my God, that is hilarious.
Tim. There is a whole category of songs which were written usually in the 70s, which you couldn't write more offensive rugby songs now. Like Gary Puckett, Young Girl, just listen to the words. It's horrendous. It's horrendous. And there's loads of them.
In those songs, isn't it interesting how when there's loads of songs about people that are 16, that sounds so much creepier than the ones about 17?
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole...
Like, incredibly... You were about to say Trapped in My Closet there, Phil.
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
There's a whole genre, isn't there, of statutory rape rock, I guess.
this is ludicrous. The part of the album where they're singing about the discovery of the person in the kitchen cabinet is just insane.
So ridiculous.
You probably don't need to talk about Gary Puckett or Ja Rule.
I do like that you jump from R. Kelly to Gary Puckett.
Because it's the same principle.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, it's only one of us on this podcast has taken time out of our day to proactively go and see R. Kelly.
Yes. That'd be me.
Yeah.
That would be me. That's not what you need to hear the full story. That's completely out of context. And it was a long time ago. And I didn't pay. I didn't pay to go. Yes, okay.
Right.
Any more? I'm trying to think if I've got any more things I want to talk about. Not really.
While you're thinking about that, I'll just mention Puddletown RFC, who've sent us a little couple of pictures of the end of their season on Twitter, at Rugby Podcast. They just said, boys letting their hair down after the last game of the season. A good season, finishing fifth in Dorset and Wilts Division 1 South with a limited player base. And as much as we've been celebrating the teams that are winning or all the rest of it, just for some clubs, particularly post-COVID and everything, getting through a season is no mean feat.
Yeah.
And so fair play, Puddletown RFC.
Absolutely.
Here's what I wanted to talk about. I knew I had something else. I might save it for next week, but I'll give you a flavour of it. The amount of games that have been called off this season for front rows is ludicrous. The amount of teams which were struggling for front row, and they go from level 8 all the way up to national leagues. Front row, well, goes all the way up to bloody Worcester Warriors, frankly. So we've got a problem in rugby union that we need to solve this immediately, which is we cannot treat front row and people that play front row as if they're some sort of divine creatures. Or what they do is so dangerous. You've basically got two pools of people now. The people that play front row, who've almost formed a union and tell you how dangerous it is, and the people that believe them and think that playing front row is only slightly less dangerous than being like a private contractor or a mercenary or some sort of thing. Like they think
fighting in the Ukraine as a mercenary for Putin's army.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how dangerous they think front row is. So if you want to play front row, the referee's like, oh, have you got? Can you show me your front row CV? Can you show me your licences? It's nonsense. It's utter nonsense. And this is costing the game so many weekends now. There's so many boys that can't go out and play because they've not bothered coaching front rows. So we've got this horrible situation where welfare first and foremost, safety first and foremost, it's not that hard. It's not that dangerous. It just isn't. And what you end up doing is you end up playing. So we played this week, and we played against a front row who they weren't of the standard required to play against us. Because what teams will end up doing, instead of getting their best player who is capable of playing front row, they will get the actual official front row from the second team or the third team or the fourth team. And don't tell me that's safer, because it just simply is not safer. We need to be training more lads to play front row. It needs to be less of a,
stigma
about it.
And unicorn.
Yeah, it's not bloody hard, boys. You can, you know, most people can do it. But I think the way that rugby handles the situation means that all these games are getting missed and cancelled, because we just don't let people decide. If someone decides they want to play front row that game, just let them play front row, and that will be that.
I do agree with the general point.
I think it's costing us so many games.
Yeah, and we don't want any more games cancelled. We had enough over the last 2 years.
No, I mean, we've had in our league 2 games cancelled against us purely for front row.
And maybe coming it from the other side and empower lads if right now, if you're reasonably strong, if you've got a reasonable deadlift but you play blindside flanker, you can easily do it.
Most of the lads they don't even want to know. You know, will you play proper? Oh no, I've heard it's horrible. It's not, it's easy. Then when they start playing, it's like, yeah, this is absolutely fine. It's not a hard position.
And it's maybe 12 times a game for 10 seconds at a time. You can do it, and it'll be a brilliant... depending on the level, obviously, I wouldn't say there's necessarily someone in the Premiership, because they do have options and stuff. But at lower leagues particularly, you can do it.
You've done it.
We've talked about this before. I've done it and stepped in when we were short. Stepped in exactly that from the flat. Went, yeah, sod it, I'll do it for the last 20 minutes. I'll go tired. Yeah.
But that'd be banned, though. Oh, you've not had experience. So it's like chicken and egg. Where do you get the experience from? And, no one wants to drop down to the, you know, a junior team. But even if you're on a junior team, if you're on the most junior team, where would you get your experience then? Because you have to play for a more junior team than that before you can play front row. It's nonsense. Absolute nonsense.
Or maybe clubs should be a little bit more forward-thinking in this. And when they do have guys in second, third team or whatever, just rotating them in. So they get some exposure, so they've got a little bit of confidence. That could be done easily.
Yeah, yeah.
Straight away. Really good.
Yeah. Solve the front row crisis. That is a real crisis, is the front row crisis. Right.
Next week's fixtures. We'll rattle through them.
Whoever won this week will win next week.
So, Leinster beat Connacht. They're going to win.
Yep.
Bristol beat Sale, so they're going to win by your logic.
Maybe not that one.
Okay, so we'll flip that around.
Sale will win that one.
Sale win. Bristol won away, so Sale will win away.
Yeah.
Then, where are we? On the Saturday, Quinns is the early kickoff. Quinns Montpellier.
Montpellier win that.
I'm looking forward to that game. I think Quinns can do it, you know. French teams don't travel well. Montpellier, while they're doing well this season, bit flaky. Give me Quinns.
No chance. Montpellier smash them.
Then La Rochelle, Bordeaux. It's going to be a home win.
Yep.
Munster, Exeter. That's 2 good games. They're both the 3 o'clock kickoffs.
I think Exeter win that.
I think Exeter will win. I think it will be another very close game.
Yeah.
Then Leicester, Clermont. Home win.
Yeah.
The big game, 8 o'clock on Saturday night. That's such
a
good
time. I'm there.
Oh, it's such a good time to watch rugby as well. I love that time of game. Going to watch it without my phone, with nothing to distract me. I might have one or two DDH IPAs or deepers, one or two nice, very nice beers on my own with no distractions, watching my boys Ulster take down Toulouse. Come on, Ulster.
That'd be nice. It'd be nice.
Although I actually think it's 60-40 in Toulouse's favour. I think Toulouse are slight favourites going into that. And then, that's a bit disappointing.
I did just want to say, we don't have to go down a conversation here. I'm just going to pin it to the notice board, because if Ulster do pull that off, I just think one name that has never come up when we talk about next England coach, but
Dammit Farland
would be worth to be in the conversation, is Dammit Farland.
He's done a brilliant job. Brilliant, brilliant job. And he's such a no-nonsense talker. Like, Steve Borthwick gets a lot of credit for just kind of saying it how it is. And it's almost too hard to say the obvious stuff. Someone like Pat Sanderson...
Alex
Sanderson makes it all... He wants to make it all seem like magic. Whereas it's not. It's not.
We've deload. If I said to you, shall we deload your training this week? Oh, you want me to train less?
So, McFarland is doing a great job. And whether Ulster get through or not, he is still doing a great job with significantly less resources than Toulouse have got. Put it that way.
Agreed.
Disappointingly, there's only one game on the Sunday, and it's one of the worst games. Racing 92 hosts Stade Francais, which will be a home win.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, there's obviously the Challenge Cup fixtures, of which BT Sport are covering those as well. But yes, in terms of the Champions Cup, that is the only game. In fact, there's only one Challenge Cup game on the Sunday as well, the Saracens one.
That'd be worth watching, I guess. Or will it? Not really.
No.
They're worth by 50 points, so...
Well, it's a different format as well in the Challenge Cup. It's not the two-legged playoff.
So it's the round of 16 now.
Is this the first start of the round of 16?
Yeah.
Presumably they're not having two legs then.
No.
There you go.
So it is a round of 16 knockout in the Challenge Cup.
Great stuff.
Yeah. And in the United Rugby Championship, there were games, obviously, because, well, the South African team's not competing in Europe, and Welsh team's not competing in Europe. So Scarlets hammered Cardiff.
Yeah, I saw that. They really hammered them.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. There you go.
Really important.
I hope friend of the pod, Graham Rowntree, gets the gig at Munster.
Yeah, that would be an interesting permanent appointment.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to see that as well.
It feels like when you look at his CV, it feels like, give him the reins to the ship now. He's had enough number two and forward and scrum coach and all that roles with the Lions. And Sam Warburton, who I worked with at the weekend, just speaks very, very highly of him. So, yeah, give him the gig.
Yeah, it would be interesting then if he does get that gig and does well. Because the constituent parts of it... Because he was in the 2015 coaching team, wasn't he? The England 2015 coaching team alongside Farrell and Mike Catt and Stuart Lancaster, who obviously that was the worst performance by, well, a home nation, or as in host nation for a World Cup, or an England team at a World Cup. But then, interestingly, all of the constituent parts are going on and doing good things. So, it's interesting. Let's end on that note.
Yeah.
Right.
Nice one.
Well, I guess I'll see you all next week.
Perfect.
I'll be there in person, I promise. Well, it's Easter weekend, so are you having a long one in Wales, JB?
We'll do it on
the Monday.
Oh, and also, will we have the additional tripod?
I'm so sorry. That's completely my bad. I thought I was going to be away for a couple of days, and I haven't actually been home since Tuesday.
Couldn't get out of Monaco again.
Yeah, I'm back tomorrow night. So yes, I will get through and get that sorted. There'll be an extra podcast in your feed imminently.
Awesome. Right.
Perfect.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.